Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast. It's me, Rob, from the YouTube channel MotoBob. I'm joined, as always, by Tim. And we've been out riding today on the BMW R12 and R12 90. So that's going to be the heavy focus of this episode. I was just thinking there, a news story that I saw the other day that we should just tick off before we get into the bikes.
Okay.
BMW are actually going to be at EICMA this year. They've been out for like, I don't know, 2-3 years perhaps. They pulled out and said it wasn't really worth it. Probably since the pandemic. New guy in, running things, and they're going to be back and bigger than... He didn't say bigger than ever, but...
Well, you'd hope so.
You can't just say something's going to be back.
Yeah, we're just going to dip a toe. Yeah. Yeah, hopefully. I mean, does that also, in your opinion, pure speculation, mean maybe they've got something to release?
Good question, Tim. I don't know. I mean, there are certain things that have been trademarked over the past few years or like registered for emissions registers and things like that.
Right.
So, you know, they have their M1000RR sports bike that's like the super spec version with all the carbon bodywork. They've got an M1000XR. They've got an M1000R, the naked version. There was a copyright for an M1300GS.
Okay.
So that'd be like a GS with carbon and all the performance parts. Maybe like like a really fast road version.
Yeah, I can picture it, yeah.
That could be on the horizon. But it's always been an interesting one because think of Motorcycle Live. It was by far and away the most lavish stand. It was one of the biggest. It had the most bikes. It had the most variety because they had like a race bike or two, an electric area, the custom area with the R12 and R18s, sports bikes, adventure bikes. And then in the middle, the little play area where people are going round and round doing tricks and stuff and everyone's getting all excited. And I know that comes out of BMW UK's budget, I guess, or Europe. And perhaps EICMA is a global thing. Sometimes the Italian marketing team put their budget to get in a stand there. But yeah, it's a different thing. But it's still very interesting to see such a difference in approach over the past few years where it's probably the most money going into Motorcycle Live and then EICMA just not bothering. But I've got to say, being there last year and covering it, it's disappointing. I think when all the new bikes have been announced, not to be able to go and show one of the brands that people really love.
It's a big hitter. Yeah. It's not like Sinus is missing it out or something like that. You know, it's nothing against Sinus.
Just but, rewind
come
that.
At me. Come at me. But it is it's a big loss. It's a noticeable omission.
Absence. Yeah, you're just like, can I go and do a walk around of the new GS? No. The new R12 and R1290 came a little bit after, but still, you know, those are the sort of big popular bikes. It would have been great to cover. So I'm really happy it's going to be back. And also, having been to London recently, that was very small, but Motorcycle Live felt like it was perhaps busier than previous years, or there were more stands there and things like that.
Yeah.
Question is, are motorcycle shows on the up again after a couple of very difficult years around COVID where attendances, well, they weren't possible potentially year, but depending on what time of year they were happening, but also just people I think were less excited about going and standing in a huge room of other germ bags. Just people didn't want to be around each other.
Diplomatic way of putting it,
But now maybe people are just getting used to it again.
I think so. I mean, we said that with the first one back, if not the next one back after the COVID lockdown and things. And actually had a nice kind of vibe to it. And there was a little bit of excitement to it. And everyone just sort of seemed happy to be there for obvious reasons, I guess. But yeah, it was nice. So maybe they're on the up,
Fingers crossed. Anyway, we'll definitely be at EICMA and definitely be covering the BMW stand. Hooray! Good news for 2024. But today, we're really going to be talking about the R12 and R1290 that, like I say, we've been out shooting a comparison video of the two bikes today. So we've had plenty of time with them, plenty of time filming as well and messing about with cameras. But in doing a lot of those little U-turns, you know, while you're doing annoying passes by the camera.
Yeah, all the best bits.
You know, setting stuff up in the cockpit, like the action cameras and stuff like that. You just get to know the bike and you're always like messing around with it, playing with the modes, things like that. So I think we got a good amount of time on them today and should be able to answer some of the questions that were posed in a community post that I stuck on the main channel a few days ago. So I asked, what would you like to know about it? And we'll answer them in a podcast episode. And I've sorted this by the top comments. So they're the ones that get the most likes and replies, I think. So if you asked a good question, hopefully it'll bubble to the top. Mm. So we're going to go in reverse order. We'll get through as many as we can before Tim has to get on the road for your drive home.
Yeah, in a car of all things. Yeah,
instead there's 52. Do you think it was?
I'll answer some from the car, yeah.
Number one is from CSYU. Do you see the fuel gauge? Yeah, it's 2024. So it's a bike that hasn't had a fuel gauge for quite some time.
Ah, okay.
I didn't notice. It's difficult to say because we had the Micro TFT dash, which is an optional upgrade, which we both really liked. Yeah. It's a really minimal little dash. It looks clean. And I did get a fuel warning to tell me I only had 2 miles left earlier today when we quickly pulled over and filled up. Mm-hmm. But I don't think, jogging through it, I noticed the fuel gauge.
Not with, like you say, it's not a, I guess, fair rep because it's I'll carry on. Because obviously we've got that fancy smaller dash on it, which I think I would pick, if I'm being honest. Because we did get to a point where you needed to fill yours up. And it flashed up and told you to. And you asked me if I could see how much range I had. And I had absolutely no idea because I did cycle through, but had other things to concentrate on. So I actually didn't know. So it was a little confusing to use on that dash, as nice as it looks.
So flicking through it and even going into the customization of that TFT display where you can choose what metrics you want to show and what you don't, I can't find it. I can find fuel consumption.
Yeah.
I can find...
Yeah, I could find that as well. Less useful.
Yeah, it's not really much use to know how much fuel, at what rate you're burning fuel.
No.
If you don't know how much there is left. Because, no, I suppose there is, right? If you write...
Like trigonometry, you can sort of backwards engineer it and work out when you're going to run out.
No, I think if it gives you an error, sorry, if it gives you a warning tells you that there's not much left, then you might switch to the consumption and try and ride in a more economical manner.
Okay.
Maybe, but it would be very nice to know just how much is in there, quite frankly. Mm. And I believe the old one, the problem was the shape of the fuel tank.
Right.
It wasn't conducive to a fuel gauge.
Oh, okay. Like it wouldn't be able to tell you when it was running low.
I don't know. Yeah, perhaps. They've really changed the tanks. The R12's got a smaller one that's 14 litres.
Mm-hmm.
It's 16, I think, on the R12 90.
Yeah.
So they've reworked it, but I don't believe there's a fuel gauge. Can't speak for the standard dash, but if it's not on the little micro TFT,
you'd assume.
There's not much hope.
At Yashwag83 says, look at the orange peel in the second pick. Don't know what has happened to the manufacturers lately. I assume they're talking about the finish in that paint.
I had to check the second picture that I put on this post to make sure that there wasn't actually just orange peel.
It's just Rob's lunch on the tag there. No, I kind of get what they mean. He's talking about the finish. I have to say, it didn't really stand out to me as a negative from the day.
You don't really notice it until you put it under these sorts of lights. Well, we've got the hex lights above it and then a big key light to the side. And where you've got the edges of that light, you can see a little bit of mottling.
Mm.
But like, I'm not really an expert on paint, to be honest.
Well, you have painted a tank though. I was literally just about to say.
Yeah, and it looks like that.
Someone who has painted. So basically they're just getting in loads of Robs to paint it.
I got to go to the Triumph factory and tried to paint a Bonneville tank. And yeah, it came out okay. Having all the equipment, look, it makes such a big difference that even my terrible job versus the pros that work there at Triumph was still much better than anything I'd done with a rattle can or whatever in the past on bike parts and stuff. But I still don't think mine quite looked right. It looks a bit like this.
Mm.
Probably worse, realistically. But then I'm not quite sure. I didn't get to this level with the Triumph guys of like, what is needed there? Is it better application or is it better polishing? Or a thicker coat, and then you polish it back more to get rid of that. I don't know. In fact, Yashwag83, maybe let us know. In fact, there's some replies here.
Get them out the door quickly. So you're saying it's a rush job there.
Yeah, maybe.
Peoples. What's an orange peel? Oh, okay. There we go. Because I see nothing. Someone agrees. Well, I don't know. Maybe you should know what it was.
Edward Nola says it's water-based paint. Ever gloss the door? Oil-based paint has a viscosity to flow and heal itself and always gives a smoother finish. So he reckons it's water-based paint. Maybe it's cheaper or something. Who knows? But honestly, seeing the bikes in the flesh outside.
It's not, I mean, yours is under, that is harsh lighting.
Yeah.
And it's not even the same as if it was a sunny day. So it does look better actually out on the road.
It wasn't a problem for me today. It's not something I picked up on until I read that comment. This is genuinely the number three comment in this list, but it's got a bit of Tim love in it, so that's nice. Lovely high quality bikes, which I'm sure be a joy to ride. Biggest issue for most, considering these, will be the cost. Can you include service intervals and costs versus main rivals? Maybe we'll get to that in the main review or talk about it, you know, at a later point, but I don't have that to hand. Oh, wait, sorry. P.S. he says.
Yeah.
Hi to Tim.
Most important thing, yeah. Hi to Tim, the man that steered me to a Gutsy. Thank you, Tim. You're very welcome. I hope you love it.
That's at Dreading Bath. But look, we did talk about the price of these two bikes. Yeah. I don't think the R12, which is more cruiser style, just under 12 grand is particularly excessive in terms of price versus the competition. So something like a Triumph Bobber would be comparable in terms of level of manufacturer and the sort of style of bike you're getting and the level of finish and also the performance level in terms of like power and torque and, you know, all those sorts of things I think are fairly comparable. And they're in a similar ballpark. Mm-hmm. The R129T, which effectively sort of replaces the R9T, is a lot now. It's 14.5 grand. It's probably roughly comparable with the top spec R9T of the previous gen, but there isn't like the varying levels now of R9T Pure, the very basic one, which was more around the 10, 11 grand.
I mean, do you think they'll bring that out? I mean, you obviously don't know anything yet, but do you reckon?
I don't know, but you've got quite a few bikes to consider in the previous lineup. So R90 Pure, then there was the Top Dog R90, and then also the Scrambler version and the Urban GS. Yeah. And they also had at one point the R90 Racer.
Yeah.
Now, given how different these two bikes are, but they're based upon the same platform,
yes,
doesn't seem like a huge mental leap to imagine that they're probably going to be able to fit some other different applications into the lineup. And so one would hope is what I'm trying to say, this long way of saying that there will be other tiers as they kind of phase out the older R9T, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But perhaps they launch with these two because they are the most impressive and exciting looking and that sort of thing. But it is something we definitely talked about today, the fact that 14 and a half grand as a starting point for the road-focused, non-cruisery version is just way above not just their own previous bikes in their lineup, but also things like the Triumph Speed Twin 1200. What's that? I think that's 11 or 12 grand now. What else would you compare to this? Oh, Kawasaki Z900 RS, you know, Yamaha XSR 900, those retro, but quite performance biased.
Indian FTR.
Indian FTR is expensive though.
Yeah.
They're always,
they are.
They're probably, you know, on a par with that and beyond. But certainly there are other good options. So probably BMW have to give people a little bit more of an accessible price point to make it tempting to buy them over the competition.
For sure. You got at KMW300. And my question is about ergonomics. How tall are you and how do the bikes fit you? Thank you.
Well, I'm 6'2".
I was going to say 6'5", actually. Yeah, thanks for asking. Moving on. No further questions.
And they feel tiny. They both feel tiny because I'm tiny a huge
bike.
Guy.
Yeah, it's a toy bike, like a clown bike. No, so I'm 5'10.5".
Oh,
that's 10, legit. I'm telling you.
10.56.
Yeah.
I'm 5'9". And the two seat heights on these two bikes we just mentioned when we were out filming is 795mm for the R129T, which I think is totally acceptable for a naked bike, retro bike, general bike. And then it was 754mm for the R12, which 41 millimeters lower, sorry. Yeah, there's a pronounced difference. It's definitely easier to get your feet down, but I wouldn't say it feels particularly like a small bike. And I think also if you look at other cruisers, like some of the Harleys and bikes like that, some of the Indians that might be even lower than that, it's actually a fairly moderate cruiser position. It's not like bum on the floor, feet really far forward, hands really high on some ape hanger bars. It's it's quite mild.
Really well considered, I would say. Yeah, it's not, like you say, it's not on the extreme outer edge of whatever kind of ergonomics you can imagine. It's something you don't really think about, or at least I didn't from today, which must mean that it's comfortable.
If you were a little bit shorter, you'd probably be better off with the R12. If you're really concerned about getting your feet down, you can't get around the fact that the 41 mil difference in seat height is going to be beneficial to someone who's got short legs.
But,
that's just facts.
Yeah. 795, though, is a pretty comfortable height, I would say, right? Because a lot of other bikes in that bracket, 800, even 830, depending on the bike, you know, they can be up there. And it really, it depends on the sort of taper of the seat as well and how sort of narrow it is. But I would say very few people are going to sort of struggle with either one of these bikes, really.
That's probably fair. Yeah, I was going to say.
The R1290 is big, fairly big and fairly sort of substantial in comparison to some others. Like if you had a Ducati Monster, for example, or something in you know, that sort of bracket, they feel a bit lighter. So if the weight was a factor, that might be something. But height-wise, no.
They've shaven off a bit of weight. 220 kilograms wet, I believe, now for the R1290. I can't remember how many kilos off that is. The cruiser version's 7 kilos heavier, so that's 227 wet. I think both pretty reasonable for the genre of bike they're in, but I think you're right. If you... Oh, this is a hard one to kind of sum up, but if you want something very light and sort of you're a smaller rider and perhaps it's not just the height but also the weight, then I think... If you're looking for a retro, like a Scrambler 800 is brilliant because they're very light and still not massive. But yeah, neither of these should be too crazy big for people. What I will say though is if you're very, very tall, might not be the bike for you. I don't know.
No, I mean, if you're over, I don't know, if you're like sort of six, I never even consider, shows what my focus is for the tall people out there. But I know it is genuinely a problem, or it can be, because Gareth, my boss in the bike show, actually loves bikes, but there were so many of them that he'd sit on and it would literally look ridiculous.
Yeah,
it would look like a clown bike. Yeah, exactly. And he'd be sort of arching his back over. And as much as he obviously enjoyed whichever bike it was, there was no question that it just wasn't built for him. So for him, I probably would steer him away from the R12, which might be a little cramped if you were, you know, 6'2" upwards or something.
I know why it is, by the way, that you don't consider tall people when you get asked about how tall are you and what are the ergonomics, because it's not a matter of life and death if the bike looks small, but if you're short and you can't reach the floor, that does sometimes feel like a matter of, not quite, but...
No,
you know, I think it's more...
it's cause for concern. I stuck my dad on my Africa Twin, and whilst he loved it, I did have to sort of chase him around. You know, like if someone was jumping on a penny farthing, it was basically the same thing.
You need the leg up guy.
Yeah, you need the guy to get you on and off it. And I was that guy. So yeah, I get it.
Yes. And actually, last thing on short people, tall people, what bikes they should buy. If you want a retro and you are really tall and you think these look like too toy bikey, as you say... Scrambler 1200 XE from Triumph.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Got a lot of the charm, let's say. Mm-hmm. Really good to ride. Not quite as good handling as those two bikes on the road.
No.
But in terms of like stance and stature, it really is ideal for, you know, very tall people. Next up, we've got Sam Hill 3496. Great lot of good updates to the machine. Battery, airbox, controls act. I have a 2023 R90 Uggs. Oh, Urban GS. Yeah. Can't fool me. Great bike. Center stand question mark? SW Motec. Is this...
just non sequiturs, just a load of random
thoughts. Lots of words. Looks great. Get rid of that goofy air nozzle. Real gas tank. Ride it. Enjoy. Ooh! Okay, I figured out what they're saying now.
Okay.
Do you remember the air intake on the old R90 was along the side?
Yes.
That scoop thing.
I do remember.
Looks like
that.
An elephant's trunk in a way. That might be a polite way to put it.
Sure.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Hadn't even thought of that.
No.
I think the reasoning is that the airbox on the previous gen was up under the tank or something because they left it looking very custom style with that see-through subframe area. Do you know what I mean? That's like a real common trend, isn't it, in custom bikes to have just a metal frame, take the side panels off, strip out all the airbox, move the battery under the bike somewhere, and you've just got a very minimal back end. And that's one of the things that did look quite cool about it. But I wonder if it's also like emissions as well that they had to beef up the airbox a bit. But yeah, you do have a more traditional back end to this with side panels, normal subframe, all that kind of thing. And it's got to be said, they've made it look so much neater at the back there. We were talking about this earlier, the fact that the previous gen, although it did look kind of custom, there's a lot of pieces of steel going in different directions, not very cohesive. A lot of stuff on show that maybe could have been neatened up.
Yeah,
if you compared it to a Triumph where everything is designed and tidy, it didn't look quite as sleek, whereas these are much more cohesive and it looks kind of quality, doesn't it? So I'm pretty impressed with them. I agree with Sam Hill, lots of good updates, all the ones he mentions. And I agree, the Goofy Air nozzle, glad to see the back of it, quite frankly. Mainly because I didn't like to look at the front of it.
So, next comment is Porsche 996. Yeah, that's good. Moving on. Segue. At Porsche 996 driver, I've got further questions for you. I'd like to know about your car. Looks amazing. What makes it an R12 version? More power is always welcome.
Don't give him what he wants. He's obviously put that as the username, yeah. So you do ask about the car.
I hope he's still got it. Otherwise, that's just a name that, you know, you make an email address when you're younger. And it's no longer relevant. Maybe you sold it.
What makes it an R12 version? That's an interesting thing. I think the question there is, the R12 as a naming convention for the cruiser style bike makes total sense, right? Because it's a baby sibling to the R18 cruiser and it's roughly 1200cc. So R12 suits it perfectly. Mm. Where it doesn't quite make sense is that the R9T is now called the R12 9T.
Yeah.
And this tricked you up a bit earlier. You were like, what capacity are we at now?
Yeah.
It's the same.
Yeah.
So the R90 was 1170, I think, cc. So just shy of 1200. You could call it, round it up and call it a 1200 if you're being generous. This is also an 1170, which you could round up to 1200. But I think they've just tried to streamline, let's say, the naming convention. Is that fair?
Kind of, but it seems more confused than ever because there are now more words in it.
Look, they're all R12s now. Mm. All the 1200 air-cooled, air and oil-cooled boxers.
Sure.
And then you just stick something on the end.
Yeah.
So the Cruiser's the R12 because it's similar to the R18, but there's the R12 9T. And then when they bring in the Scrambler, it'd probably just be the R12 Scrambler, the R12 Urban GS, the R12 Racer.
Yeah.
And hopefully not the R12 9T Scrambler.
Imagine.
That'd be getting too long.
But they could. I hope they don't.
This,
I don't like it. I'm never going to come around on it. I will never concede this point if BMW...
You're just going to call it an R90.
R12. I guess I can't call it the R12 because the R12 is the R12.
Yeah.
They got hook, line, and sinker.
It's either almost way, as bad as the Triumph Scrambler 1200 XE and XC, which must have caused them so many problems, like misordering parts and bikes. Like if someone calls up, they're like, I'd like to order a Triumph Scrambler 1200 XE or XC.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I know that, yeah.
That, over a phone line. That was line, bad naming for me. But R12 9T is also confusing. It's just maybe not practically as bad as that. But yeah, I think people are a little confused. But yeah, they're all 1200s. That's all you need to know. And they always have been, even though they were called the R9T. Salad Dodger. Relatable. Bob, what's the story on tank range? Would love a crazy Dakar-sized tank.
It's not far off, I'm not going to lie. The R12 9T is bulbous. Big, and it's bigger than the outgoing version, I'm sure.
16 litres. I'm not quite, I haven't got like for like comparison.
But in terms of, maybe not in terms of actual fuel capacity, but in terms of, you know, size between your legs.
Hello. Looks big.
Yeah, it does look big. Yeah, again, hello. But yeah, it does.
But not actually got that much to back it
up. All right. Let's not follow the analogy through.
That's what you were saying. 16 litres, I think, is reasonable, probably for this style of bike. If you really care about tank range and you want a retro, Moto Guzzi.
Yeah.
V7, isn't it 20 litres or
like,
something?
Mine was a 21. They might have gone down to like 20.
Yeah, 21, I think.
Pretty big.
Really long. That's why. And that's a signature visual feature, but also the practical benefits. If you are the sort of person who weirdly wants to go on really long rides on a retro bike, you know, they're there.
Yeah. And I will always jump in to defend the V7.
I think it's about 5.5 litres consumed per 100 kilometres on this bike, which would mean you could get just under 300k on a tank.
That's pretty good.
We'll double check those figures and flash them up on the screen if I'm wrong, but that's about 200 miles. Mm. I think totally reasonable. Massive Dakar style tank on that bike. Personally, I'm not immediately convinced, but that's the good thing about motorcycling. It's a broad church.
Mm-hmm. Next one is at Boris Bowman. Waiting on the review. Just took a ride on the FTR. I'm looking for a 1000cc plus fun bike, but not too sporty.
You've ridden the FTR.
I have. And actually, I compared a little bit. Did I compare a little bit to, yeah, I was saying the R12 actually, wasn't I? For the version that I rode, which was the older version with the bigger front wheel. Now it's obviously 17, so a little bit sportier. I could see some sort of parallels in as much as, actually, so from today, I had a little bit of a moment on like greasy road, cold tires, where the rear just kind of lost traction a little bit. And because of the kind of length of it, predictability, it just felt fine. It wasn't a concern at all. You sort of just, you know, get it back in line. And the same is true of the FTR. I think that's great. And Fort9 did a video on it, drifting, right? And how
long it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's perfect proportions for that. And I think some of that is also true of this one from the original version of the FTR.
You're talking about the R12 cruiser style bike.
Yes. More so than the other one, which actually you then obviously updated me on, which is to say that the newer FTRs are closer, in your opinion.
I believe so. The newer FTRs are on 17-inch wheels front and rear, so they've ditched that flat track. They still look a bit flat tracky, I suppose, but in terms of the chassis spec, they've kind of lowered the suspension, lowered the seat height, given them normal road focus wheels, and that also means you can get better tires, really. Like, if you want sticky, sporty tires, you can find them in those sizes because they're standard. And it does feel quite similar, I think, now to the R12 9T. As for which I'd choose out of those two, the FTR is quite raw, I would say. Like, the throttle response isn't particularly smooth. It's quite wild. And that's why some people like it, because it's a bit bonkers.
Yeah.
This offers similar levels of, like, quickness. I think we're both surprised at both bikes, how torquey and fast and snappy they are on the throttle when you put them in a fancy riding mode or like the more aggressive riding mode. And so, yeah, I think it's kind of like comparable on thrills in terms of like how quickly you can get a shift on. Surprisingly quick, but the BMW, it has to be said, is more refined probably than the Indian, which is still a bit more raw.
I think it's fair.
And there's better design gone into like the dash and stuff like that, whereas that's never really felt like a massive strong point, I don't think, on the FTR. What the FTR brings is just being a bit mad. And so, yeah, I think this is probably the one I'd go for because it can do a bit of both.
I think
it can be a bit crazy if you want it to.
Yeah, I think so. I love an FTR, and I have toyed with, like, maybe I would buy one, but I think putting my money where my mouth is, I think I'd go for the BMW.
Amen. Okay, next up, Jidan Lipto said, the last 9T was said to be pretty sporty, but this new one visually doesn't look as sporty to me. How does it compare with the last? They're pretty similar, to be fair, aren't they? They've slimmed it down. They've re-architectured it, like, in terms of the frame, and like I say, neatened it up visually, and they've moved the airbox, and there's all these little tweaks. There's probably some tweaks to the tech as well. But realistically, to ride, it's almost the same.
Yeah.
The engine character is so distinctive and defines what it feels like, you know, from the engine perspective to ride, that configuration. Mm. We've got so many parallel twins and V-twins where it doesn't feel like as much as a point of differentiation. Whereas with this bike, you're like, okay, you have to like a boxer twin.
Yeah.
And that feels, the engine feels very similar throttle delivery.
Mm.
And the handling feels similar, possibly partly owing to the fact that the engine holds its weight low and wide. Shaft drive, you know, that's another thing that really affects how it feels. Good brakes, 17-inch wheels front and rear.
Yeah.
Good suspension, adjustable.
Yeah.
Really, most of the difference for me between the R9T and this one is visual.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it does feel, I said this to you as well, right? It feels like, I love the R9T. This just feels a bit better. It's a progression. For me, it always has been maybe the sportiest retro that I've ridden.
Apart from like a Thruxton or something like
but
that.
Even a Thruxton, I would say what the Thruxton has over the BMW is it has a bit more soul and maybe a little bit more charm to it. Whereas the BMW for me just does feel a bit more precise, clinical, and I would say sportier. I feel faster on the BMW than I do on the Thruxton, as good as the Thruxton is.
It's more like the riding position as well, clip-on bars, your bum's up a bit higher, you're over. It's not very comfortable, to be honest, the Thruxton over distance, but it does feel like quite aggressive, like a bit more like a sports bike in the riding position. But I do agree that this feels, maybe more modern. Is that what you mean? Like more comparable with like a modern naked
Yeah, I mean, so...
And it's like sporty ability.
Yeah, and I've... like I say, I love the Speed Twin, I love the Thruxton, but if I was out on them with my dad, for example, when I borrowed the R9T for a long-termer, I took that out with my dad. He was on a Street Triple, and they were really good playmates. And
right,
the Street Triple is a sporty bike, right? Mm. But I don't think the same necessarily would have been true with, you know, Thruxton.
The question here is, though, is it as sporty? Look, I don't find the riding position too sporty. Like the R90 Racer, that was cafe racer style, a bit like a Thruxton. That was, again, quite uncomfy with the clip-on bars. This, I think, is quite neutral.
Yeah.
The pegs are a bit further back and stuff, but I wouldn't say it's uncomfortable. So from that perspective, I'd say it's quite versatile.
Mm.
But yeah, you can dial down the riding modes and chill it out a bit, and it doesn't feel too abrupt. But then you can whack it into dynamic, and it really does feel quite lively and sporty. And so I'd say, I don't really know whether the question is like, is it too sporty or is it not sporty enough? But either way, I would say actually it's quite a versatile bike, the R1290.
Yeah, I'd say it builds on the reputation of the previous one, which was sporty, but yeah, not aggressively so at all. And pretty much anyone could get on with riding that. Next one is from at Coach Steve. Which would you rather own between the two? And would you rather that over a Triumph Speed Twin 1200 or a Bonneville T120? So obviously just touched upon that. And I think I've given my feelings. I would probably go for the BMW actually over the Speed Twin. And that is a tough one to
Yeah, I wouldn't say that the T120 is as comparable with this as the Speed Twin because they are a bit sporty. But yeah, the Speed Twin is one of my favorite bikes, so I'd find it very difficult to turn that down.
Mm. So which one? So between Speed Twin and this, which one would you get?
I think, just give me a sec. Speed Twin 1200 is maybe more like 12 grand. Oh, 12,795, I think. That's actually more than I was thinking. I think just for the growl of the parallel twin, it's really nice, that engine.
Yeah, no, it's good.
But every time we ride or compare a Speed Twin with something, like when we rode the Norton, and you were like, the Norton's got way more specialness and soul to it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I'd probably still go Speed Twin. I think it's just one of those bikes that has maybe, it could be almost irrational place in my heart. but honestly, the key difference between those two bikes for me, this R1290 and the Speed Twin is the way the engine feels. It's so different.
Sure.
You have to ride them to make that decision yourself.
These two, which one would you pick?
These two here?
Yeah.
The R1290. If I had the money, you know, the extra. Fair. Just because of the more general sporty ride, and I think that would be more entertaining for longer.
It makes more sense. It certainly makes more sense. After the ride today, I have to say, weirdly, I am kind of leaning towards the R12 because it's quite unique. I was really hoping that it would be, and I had kind of expectations of it. But yeah, I think to sound like a broken record, the fact that it manages to get that line between, you know, being a cruiser, but also being a cruiser that can actually carve, they don't come along too often. And the only other examples I can think of are things like the Ducati Diavel.
Yeah.
Similar, right? But they're not in the same class, but it's...
This is more like retro style, but yeah, I get what you're saying. It's like... not too compromised on handling that you feel like it's not fun to ride. Super Wellington 1815, great name, love that. Do the different torque figures actually feel different when riding? I guess there's more torque out of this new engine. I mean, we both got on this morning, we're like, gosh, I forgot how fast these bikes are.
Basically.
And they just absolutely... like
it's relentless.
Yeah,
that's the thing. It just keeps going.
Like torque all the
way
up. And
with a quick shifter as well. There's just no stop to it.
Yeah, but as for how it compares to the previous gen, it'd be hard to say riding them back to back. I remember that bike feeling quick as well. So sure, like more torque is always better. But I wouldn't if I owned the previous generation and I'm looking at the spec sheet and I'm thinking, is it worth upgrading purely because I'm interested in how much more torque it makes? I actually just remember that bike being equally like fun and fast. And so I wouldn't say that's the key thing necessarily.
Mm-hmm. At Domikaz 7186, do they still have the old feel to it? Do they?
I mean, they're air and oil cooled. So that's kind of like worth something to some people, just knowing that.
Yeah.
And the Boxer Twin, in a way, does have a bit of a feel to it.
Mm. I've not noticed the rock over quite as much.
When you fire it up.
Yeah. And with even with the previous version, I can't say it sort of it was as noticeable. But with this one, yeah, while I was sat there revving it on, you really can feel that. And that is something that goes towards it feeling a little bit older.
Yeah, totally. It is one thing. But I would say generally, it's not like riding an Enfield or something like that.
No.
That really does bring a lot of the old school feel. These, the way they handle, the components, the braking, the suspension quality, all the rider aids, having that little techie TFT display. They got a little bit of old school styling to them, but I would say largely they're more comparable to like a modern bike.
I would say.
Anyway, I think that's probably all the questions we got time for. I'll dive in and try and answer some of these in the replies so that everybody feels like they've got a response. But many thanks to everybody for all their questions. Normally we do a bike of the week. What's yours this week then? Out of these two? It's the R12.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, it's the R12, yeah.
Yeah. I think mine would be the R12 9T. But as always, we'd love to know what you guys have picked down in the comments below. More of a cruiser style, or do you prefer the naked retro versatility? We'll be back next week with a bit more. I guess it'll be a newsy episode next week because we haven't got any filming planned, but we'll look forward to that. Many thanks for listening, and we'll see you then.
Bye-bye.